This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, May 21st, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by the Hotel Seville, welcoming the month of May and motorcyclists riding through the Buffalo River National Park. Hotel Seville is located in downtown Harrison and the Lake Harrison Marketplace. May motorcycle rates and more information available at hotelseville.com.
In just a few minutes on this edition of Ozarks at Large, we'll look at tomorrow's vote in Washington County for a quarter-cent sales tax that would be used to fund an expanded public transit system in the county. Plus, Classical Edge brings Shakespeare to the people this summer, and the fourth annual KUAF Classical Chamber Music Festival begins later this week. That and more ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
But first, Governor Mike Beebe is promising to pay back $500,000 to veterans and their families who were illegally charged for services over the past 3 years. The money will come from a discretionary fund, and Beebe says he'll wait to pay it back until an audit of the Department of Veterans Affairs is completed. Beebe says it's the right thing to do.
You want to take care of your vets, and they collected money out there for the last couple years that they should not have collected from vets because they were being paid by the federal government. Now, it's important to note they didn't put the money in their pocket. They were trying to spend it on veterans, but still, they should not have done that. And so it's important to take care of your vets, and part of taking care of them is if they paid something they should not have paid or their families paid something they should not have paid, then it's incumbent on all of us to try to repay them.
In the wake of an audit that revealed several financial problems, the director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Dave Fletcher, resigned last week. Beebe announced the hiring of retired Arkansas National Guard Colonel Sissy Rucker to fill the post.
A new report shows the state's unemployment numbers declined for the ninth straight month. The Department of Workforce Services released new figures saying the unemployment rate dropped 0.2 points last month to 7.2%. Spokeswoman Kim Friedman says most sectors saw some improvement.
Your largest expansion occurred in leisure and hospitality with an increase of 3,700 jobs. Hiring was mostly seasonal, with food services adding a majority of that.
Educational and health services also saw substantial growth. Friedman says Arkansas's unemployment rate is 1.1% lower than the national average, which sits at 8.1%.
Click It or Ticket is a national seatbelt enforcement campaign, and Arkansas State Police are joining in beginning today. The campaign of increased vigilance directed at those who refuse to buckle up goes through June 3rd. Ann Whitehead with the Arkansas State Police says fewer people in Arkansas use their seatbelts than in other areas of the country, and they aim to change that.
Those who don't wear seatbelts are not only risking their lives, they're disobeying the law. So that's the reason Arkansas law enforcement is going to be out around the clock looking for those who choose to ignore this warning. We hope all motorists will have a safe holiday and buckle up and avoid being stopped and ticketed.
State police say almost 60% of those who die in auto accidents in Arkansas aren't wearing a seatbelt.
The University of Arkansas softball team fell to number one California in the Berkeley Regional Finals last night. It's the first time in the program's history that it has made it to a regional final. Arkansas ends its 2012 season with a 29-28 record while going 2-2 this weekend in postseason play.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals dropped their second game in a row, falling to the Arkansas Travelers 4-3 yesterday afternoon at Dickey Stevens Park. Naturals starter Chris Dwyer was perfect over the first four innings he pitched and allowed just 2 runs on 3 hits over his 6 2/3 total. He struck out 5 and walked 3 over the course of his outing. The Naturals are looking for the series split today with a game that is currently in progress. The Naturals will return to Arvis Ballpark Wednesday evening when they take on the Midland Rockhounds. First pitch is scheduled for 7 o'clock.
This is Ozarks at Large. By the end of tomorrow night, it will be known if a proposed sales tax in Washington County to fund an expanded transit system has earned voter approval. Mike Lanier is the chair of the group Advocates for Public Transit. It's a group working for the passage of the tax. He says the proposal is a chance for Washington County residents to have a public transportation system that will serve everybody.
Right now, the transit system is a small system, is fairly inefficient in that it only serves those that are not able to have any other mobility options. The transit system that we are advocating, and this is the Advocates for Public Transit that I'm talking about, not ORT, but just concerned citizens, we want a transit system that will allow us to get out of the automobiles and travel more efficiently and cheaply throughout the county.
Mike Malone, the president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, says he agrees that Northwest Arkansas, still one of the fastest growing areas in the country, needs an expansion of public transportation. But he says he thinks the quarter-cent tax proposal on the ballot isn't the right plan.
It is ambitious, to say the least, to think that any public organization can receive a 500% increase in funds and grow their operations five times over. I'd like to see a more measured increase. I don't know if that's a doubling of their revenue or somewhere in that neighborhood.
Advocates for public transit agree that the money raised by a quarter cent sales tax would make for an ambitious growth trajectory for public transit, more than quadrupling the number of fixed transit routes and the number of buses in Washington County by the year 2022. Phil Pumphrey, the executive director of Ozark Regional Transit, says that organization has devised a plan it thinks it could implement.
We expand our service hours to midnight. We run Saturdays and Sundays on our fixed routes. It's 65 new jobs. It puts the routes that we have now, 22% of the people live within a quarter mile of a fixed route. That goes to 46%. And of businesses or employment areas, it goes from 46% or within a quarter mile to 68%.
That quarter mile is important, he says, because that's the industry standard for a reasonable distance for a public transit user to walk and use mass transit. He says there has been a need for better public transportation in Northwest Arkansas for years, and that ridership on the limited ORT routes currently offered continues to rise along with the region's population. He says the number of riders in April 2012 was up 19% over April 2011, and that underlies, he says, the immediate need for expanded service.
I don't think it's the best way to go about it, and it's a couple of simple reasons.
That's Hugh Ernest. He's a proponent of moving away from a predominant car culture, and he was a member of the first Ozark Regional Transit Board. He's also publicly stated that he's opposed to the quarter-cent tax plan.
We have a regional mobility authority. We have the fastest-growing county in Arkansas, right north of us, Benton County. We're fourth, by the way. This statistic just came out. And what I've learned in a long, long time of public service is that you need to carefully think through the best possible way to do something and then go forward and ask for public support. We haven't done that here.
While the Washington County Quorum Court voted to put the matter on the ballot in front of voters tomorrow, the Benton County Quorum Court chose not to. So a truly regional plan won't come about even if Washington County voters approve the measure tomorrow. But Mike Lanier, the chair of the Advocates for Public Transit Group, says the creation of an expanded system would go a long way to creating regional cooperation. And Phil Pumphrey, the executive director of Ozark Regional Transit, says people just have to look at other infrastructure examples in Northwest Arkansas to see that that could be the case.
One of the things people have said, well, it's not regional. And that's their definition of region. But when you look at many of the major projects, infrastructure that were done here locally, and Jerry Van Hoos is chairman of ORT, he said, you know, the Water Beaver District wasn't started as a regional effort. It was Springdale at first. When 540 was built, it wasn't regional. It was a bypass around Fayetteville. And there's examples that go on and on. And I think once we get our system going and they see the economic benefits, I think the folks in Benton County will change their thoughts about it.
Mike Malone, the president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, says just about everybody agrees on the need for a growing region to have a growing transit system. But he says a growing region also needs to make an investment in highways. And a big concern for him is that a 500% increase passed for transit means opportunities to raise money for highways, a needed part of infrastructure, he says, would be diminished.
Most of our commuters, like it or hate it, most of our commuters, most of our residents are stuck in traffic because they're driving to and from a destination. And we've got to address that as a region. That, to me, that's one of our most critical priorities. And if we don't address it, we're going to be in trouble from an economic growth perspective.
There are supporters of the quarter cent tax, say that bigger highways just help perpetuate traffic problems. More highways mean more people driving cars and fewer people choosing transit and getting away from the cars. Mike Malone says he thinks it's a different premise.
We've got more traffic than we can handle on the roads we have. We need to catch up. We've got highway needs and their catch-up needs. Now, some will say you build it and more will come. They're coming anyway. New census figures are out today. In the last 12 months, 8,000 new residents in Washington and Benton County. The area is continuing to grow. Some people that don't want it to grow, it's just we're growing and it's going to happen. And so we've got to catch up on the highway needs and the congestion we're facing. It's getting worse, and with the continued population infusion, we're falling further and further behind. So my sense is, my position is we've got to invest in highways just to meet the needs of existing residents.
Mike Lanier with Advocates for Public Transit says the time is now for a dramatic expansion of a mass transit system in northwest Arkansas. While some opponents say an 8-cent tax would be a more reasonable request, the quarter cent figure, he says, could raise enough money over time to make a system that could offer enough options to be appealing to more customers.
What makes a good transit system is a transit system that is robust. And by that, I mean that you have to have a lot of buses, you have to have a lot of routes, you have to make it convenient for people. And so I know that there's been talk about going for a lesser amount. The problem that we see with that, that we have with that, is the fact that you're not having a robust system. You're back to having a system in which it is inconvenient. And so people aren't taking advantage of it. But as gas goes up, more and more people are going to want a system that's going to allow them to travel about the county and save money.
But Hugh Ernest, an opponent of the current proposal, says if voters turn down tomorrow's quarter cent tax increase, there would be an opportunity to create another plan that he thinks could be more palatable to more people.
Absolutely. First of all, and this is where I agree with Mike Malone, I think that it's best for us to simplify how many times we're asking the public to vote on yet another sales tax levy. And the need for some of the issues that are going to be addressed with that half cent from the state perspective, I think, is important to the region. And it gives us more money. The other counter is there is going to be more money available even if nothing else happens, because we're now a larger MSA and we're going to get more federal funds. Now, the counter to that is who knows what's going to happen at the federal level, because we're all going on continuing resolutions and something may change.
Other critics of the current ballot question say not enough time has been devoted to figuring out how Razorback Transit, operated by the University of Arkansas, would fit into an expanded scheme. Others dislike the use of a sales tax, considered regressive by many, as a way to fund mass transit. Mike Lanier with Advocates for Public Transit says he usually doesn't like the idea of sales taxes either, but...
However, in this case, the quarter of percent will come back to the populations that we serve many times over. When you factor in the price of gas, which is never going to go back down, it's approaching $4 now, and probably in 2 and 3 years, it's going to be much higher. And what we're putting in place is a system that's going to be a permanent system. But I think that the quarter percent is going to be money well vested for the county, and that it's going to come back to them manyfold, to them personally and also to the businesses of the county.
Another public supporter of the quarter cent tax, Lynn Donald Carver, says the use of a sales tax helps ensure the future of the proposed expansion. Instead of relying heavily on federal or state funds, she says a local sales tax means local people are paying for a large part of the way for the system to expand.
And if we have to rely on the federal government, clearly that's very unstable in terms of being able to count on the funding. And if we have to rely on state dollars, same problem there. So I think, as Phil said, I think this is a really local solution to a local issue, a local problem. And I think everybody chipping in some amount toward the transit system is fair and is the right way to go.
If most agree that there is a need for an expanded public transit system in the area, would it be wise to reject a proposal to ballot box now? Would it mean a chance to create that expanded system has been missed? Again, Mike Malone.
I don't think so. I'm hearing a lot of people that have the same sentiment I do, that we do need a dedicated source of funding for transit. We do need certainty that the resources will be there in future years to grow our transit operation. But this just isn't the right proposal because it's too large and it's not regional scope, and it may make it harder to address highways as well. So I think a lot of us who are saying we want to do something for transit, just this isn't the way to do it, we'll be there to keep working on the right solution.
Phil Pumphrey, the executive director of Ozark Regional Transit, says he thinks now is the time to begin working on expanding the public transportation component in Northwest Arkansas. He says there are many segments of the population who cannot afford to wait.
You know, there's people that can't even go on 540 unless they have ORT. There's places people can't go now. We don't have a balanced transportation network. We have a great trail system. It's fixing to be expanded. We have some bike paths. But we don't have something that gets people long distance or across town that can't afford to drive, can't drive at night. We're just really remiss in that quality of life issue.
Whether the proposal passes tomorrow or not, Hugh Ernest, an opponent of the quarter-cent sales tax, says he thinks there is public support for Ozark Regional Transit, support he thinks has been there since he served on ORT's board, and he thinks there will be continued support.
I worked very hard with several people to move this from something run by community resource group to a publicly operated and publicly funded system, and it's to the credit of the region that counties and cities have continued to support ORT. I think there's no doubt. There's no bad in this discussion.
Washington County voters will decide the fate of the quarter-cent sales tax proposal for public transit tomorrow. Polls are open from 7:30 until 7:30. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is sonnet number 145, and it's really interesting because this is one that Shakespeare actually wrote in quadrameter instead of the noted pentameter, which he was famous for.
Last month, a group of Shakespeare enthusiasts gathered inside Nightbird Books in Fayetteville to celebrate the 448th anniversary of the Bard's birthday. The celebration included trivia, music, cupcakes, and audience members reciting their favorite Shakespeare pieces. Jim Goza was one participant who read one of Shakespeare's sonnets.
That ever sweet was used in giving gentle doom, and taught it thus anew to greet. I hate, she altered with an end, that followed it as gentle as day, doth follow night who, like a fiend, from heaven to hell is flown away. I hate, from hate away she threw, and saved my life, saying, not you.
Jim is a local actor who will be participating in a production of Twelfth Night as part of a Shakespeare in the Park presentation being organized by the Classical Edge. In addition to celebrating Shakespeare's birthday, last month's event was also a fundraiser so the new theater company can fulfill its goal of bringing freak Shakespeare in the Park performances to Northwest Arkansas each summer. The Classical Edge was the brainchild of husband-wife duo Justin and Virginia Schauer.
We imagine it being a company that's devoted to providing classics with a sort of contemporary, accessible edge to them, and something that is family-friendly and then also retains the respect of the original work but also provides a kind of funky, edgy feel to it. And our Twelfth Night is actually a 7-person Twelfth Night, and the characters are being doubled by actors. So, like, one actor will play Toby Belch and the lovesick Duke Orsino, and so it's kind of a fun, Fast and Furious version of the play.
Justin and Virginia both earned a master's degree in acting from the University of Arkansas. Virginia says she loves the accessibility of Shakespeare in the Park because events like this across the country are free. In 2008, the couple was brought back to the area from California specifically to participate in a Shakespeare in the Park performance.
We did Midsummer Night's Dream when we first came back, and then the next year we did a 4-person Much Ado About Nothing, and then we kind of took a year off, and then last year we did The Tempest, and then this year we're doing Twelfth Night, all with different companies,
right.
and different sort of missions. And this year we're kind of, and we were involved in all of those productions. And this year we're kind of consolidating and saying, you know what, let's make this an annual thing and just kind of set it that, you know, we have amazing theater companies in our area, and this
really
is kind
do.
Of the one niche that hasn't been fully.
Realized
yet, and so we're going to allow that to be our contribution to the already rich and vibrant community we have.
Justin and Virginia are clearly Shakespeare enthusiasts, but what is it about the Bard that inspires such passion?
For me, it's the language and the playfulness of it and the invention of it and how he could capture universal human experiences in such a way that even 400 years later you read it and you're like, oh, I get that, you know. And yes, there are some archaic words and there are situations in the comedies that don't quite translate nowadays, but if you get down to the bare essentials, it's what we're living right now, you know. It's just very it was written like directly from the spirit of what it is to be human. And so I think that's what I'm drawn to, is that you can, and just the inventive constructions of some of the lines, and just the, I had read somewhere that the average attendee to his plays, back when he was, when they were being performed, the average person had a vocabulary of about 500 words, and he used about 20,000 words in his plays. And so the situation that a lot of contemporary audiences find themselves in, of where I don't really get all the words, is exactly the situation that audiences back then were in, except they had a love of new words. And I think we sometimes take ourselves too seriously, that we want to understand everything and we want to get out our pocket dictionaries and know what that word means, instead of just allowing the gist of the word to kind of flow over us and to get the essence of it. And so that's what I love. I just love that experimentation of it.
That's what I love about my husband, is that I agreed with every single thing he just said. he's right. It's about the heart that Shakespeare found in each human being. And when I'm able to perform his work on the stage, there is such a connection that I feel that actually is. The most when I play Shakespeare versus anything else.
So the classical in the company's name obviously refers to Shakespeare, but what about the word edge? How does one make Shakespeare edgy? The couple says it comes from the way you present the work to an audience.
I think it's about not holding too tight onto the language, not trying to make it lofty and something unobtainable. And so if you just bring it to the audience like Shakespeare did, because Shakespeare created over 3,000 words, and so the audience didn't really know all of the words that he was saying for the first time. So if you just bring it to the audience with that sense of ease and with that sense of purpose, then it brings the edge to it.
Yeah, it's not edgy as in like pushing the envelope or making it something, trying to find all of the innuendos in it. It's more about making it relatable and making it kind of funky and kind of low to the ground and minimalist but rich. At the same time.
Letting go of the big costumes and the big sets that usually come with Shakespeare and just doing it as we are.
And not making it too reverential or too precious, just allowing it to just be very democratic and very just out there. That's kind of how we imagine it. And that's going to be our mission as we go forward, is to create fun, relatable classics that have a fun edge to them, that are still family-friendly, but also have a funkiness to them.
Another part of the company's work is educational outreach. The Showers say David Jolliffe, the organization's literacy consultant, has been an integral part of the group. They say it's been a mission of his to raise literacy awareness in areas that are more economically depressed. Now, the Classical Edge is helping with that.
Another part of our mission is to take Shakespeare down to the Delta, so we'll also be doing performances in Circe and near Augusta, and then in Helena. And actually, over spring break, Virginia and I taught a Shakespeare camp to students at the Kipp Charter School, a Shakespeare literacy camp, and it was really a lot of fun, and the kids were fantastic to work with. So that's kind of another aspect of our mission is to do some educational outreach and to do some Shakespeare-centric or classic-centric workshops.
The Classical Edge will be performing Shakespeare's Twelfth Night this summer. Sunday afternoon, the company will be at the Benton County School of the Arts in Rogers. On May 31st, the Classical Edge will perform at Gully Park in Fayetteville. Both performances start at 5 o'clock. Admission is free, and audience members are welcome to bring a picnic. More information is available at theclassicaledge.org.
It is Monday, the 21st day of May 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I haven't seen this much of you in months.
No, we've been...
Did Laura kick you out?
No. I'm just back to work.
Oh, okay. So I'm guessing that you might be excited about the person who's coming to the Walton Arts Center tonight.
Yes, me, my whole family, we're going to see Gabriel Iglesias.
I have no idea who this is, so I'm just going to point to you.
Okay. Well, he is a comedian, a Hispanic comedian. A lot of people who follow him know him as Fluffy, because one of his bits is that he's not fat. He's Fluffy. Also, Pikachu is another nickname of his. He has been doing stand-up for a while now.
See him on Comedy Central often.
Yeah, he had a show this last season. Comedy Central has weird seasons. Mm-hmm. Stand-up Revolution, mm-hmm. where he was doing that. And so, you know, he'd come out with a monologue and then have other guest comedians. And it was about a half an hour, I think.
Is he family-friendly?
He is family-friendly, okay. Actually.
I saw a quote I really liked about him, that he was more of a storyteller, but his stories are about things that he's either seen or have happened to him personally with embellishment for humor's sake.
Yes. That's pretty accurate.
So tickets are $42. Show starts at 7 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center tonight. I think you'll see Antoinette there.
You will.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Burn me with your fingertips. Brand me with your tasty lips. Take a million kissing trips. It's sweet torture.
Ravoida Frierson was born one of 15 children in a farming family in Hempstead County on August 16, 1934. She sang, especially in church and in school choirs, and also loved play acting. In her late teens, she relocated to San Francisco, California to study nursing on a scholarship. But she maintained the theatrical side and continued singing in nightclubs. Ravoida Frierson took the stage name Ketty Lester.
Hello, lover. Goodbye, tears. Hello, lover. Goodbye, tears. True love walked in and the blues walked out, but who cares?
Tall and good-looking, the lure of performing eventually won over Ravoida Frierson. She released a single called Queen for a Day on the Everest label, but it went nowhere. She signed with Era Records of Los Angeles, California in 1961. Her first song for Era, Love Letters, became Arkansire Ketty Lester's landmark song. But there's more to Ketty Lester than one hit song.
They're writing songs of love, but not for me. A lucky stars above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I've found more clouds of gray than any rainy day could guarantee.
Kitty Lester would go on to record for other record companies, including RCA in 1964 and Capitol Records' Tower label in 1966. She had lesser hit songs, including the love letter Sound Alike follow-up, But Not For Me, heard here, and a version of This Land Is Your Land.
I should have known the price I'd have to pay. Although I can't dismiss the memory of his kiss, I guess he's not for me.
Lester's song, Look For Me, I'll Be Around, co-written by Little Rock native Sylvia Dee, was revived in 2002 by singer Nico Case. In 1984, Lester recorded a Christian gospel album. And while Kitty Lester would never match the commercial success of Love Letters, it surely widened the gateway into other forms of entertainment that she pursued.
When you tire of all the bright lights, pace that's killing and you're willing to stay home nights.
Kitty Lester continued singing and began making guest TV appearances on shows such as Marcus Welby MD, That Girl, Laugh-In, Green Acres, Happy Days, and L.A. Law. On Sanford and Son, she played a woman who had dated both Sanford and Son. The Arkansas-er became a regular on the TV soap opera Days of Our Lives and for 5 years on TV's Little House on the Prairie as the character Hester Sue. Kitty Lester's films include Uptight, Blackula, and Uptown Saturday Night. She appeared as Aunt Lucy in the 1994 movie House Party 3. Whether because of or in spite of her international hit Love Letters, Kitty Lester enjoyed quite the varied career in entertainment. Here in its entirety is Arkansas-er Revorda Frierson, or Kitty Lester of Hope, in Hempstead County, with the song co-written by Little Rock native Sylvia Dee, Look For Me, I'll Be Around.
That's killing, and you're willing to stay home nights. When your feet are back on the solid ground, look for me, I'll be around. When the new crowd starts to bore you, just remember there is someone to adore you. When you're weary of nights up on the town, look for me, I'll be around. Though I may not seem exciting, I've a notion, my devotion, you will need some days. I need you when the kick's gone that it brings you. You'll hanker for an anchor just to cling to when you've lived it up till it's got you down. Look for me, look for me, look for me.
Kitty Lester of Hope in Hempstead County with Look For Me, I'll Be Around, a song co-written by Sylvia Dee, who was born Josephine DeSilvia in Little Rock in 1914. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
This is Ozarks at Large for the 21st day of May 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from CreekFest Summer Event Series, located at Village on the Creeks in Rogers. This family-friendly event is free and includes a variety of entertainment each Thursday throughout the summer. CreekFest welcomes the Rogers Jazz Society this Thursday at 7 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. CreekFest.net for more information.
It is the time of the year when there seem to be music festivals all over Northwest Arkansas. And add one more to the agenda. The fourth annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival begins later this week, on Thursday night, as a matter of fact. The first concert, like most in the six-week series, will take place at Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in Fayetteville on the University of Arkansas campus. And the first one, like all of the programs in the six-week series, is free. Stephen Gates is one of the organizers for the fourth annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. He came by the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio last week to talk about the first in the series of concerts. And like in years past, it will begin with music from Bach.
We have, for the last couple of years, gotten into this thing of doing a rather large-ish piece by Bach. We started, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago with the Sixth Brandenburg, and then we've done some other things, and just thought that this would be a very, very nice program opener, and we had done it, and felt pretty sure that we could do it in the amount of rehearsal time that we have.
Then Charles
Loeffler, I guess. My French is pitiful.
So I shouldn't feel so bad that I am not familiar with this composer.
No. He pretty obviously is French. I believe he was one of the – there was a group of composers who worked, taught, composed that were associated with the Paris Conservatory in the early part of the 20th century. And they wrote a lot for woodwinds, which may reflect what they could get performed. It may reflect an emphasis at the Paris Conservatory. It may reflect, I shouldn't probably say this, but sort of a French sensibility toward music that uses a lot of the woodwind colors, you might say. And this piece is simply, in English, two rhapsodies for the unusual combination of oboe, viola, and piano.
Yeah.
Oboe, of course, Dr. Delaplaine will have played already the Bach concerto, and so she was around and available before she leaves town for the summer to play here. And the viola part in this case is Molly Sharp, who will be visiting again from Virginia, where she plays in an orchestra there. And we're very happy. You know, she grew up in Fayetteville, and we're happy to have her back. And piano is a colleague, former colleague of Tess's, who will be a woman named Robin Guy, who will be in town to play just this piece this summer, because the three of them are playing it later on this summer at a double reed conference, and I don't know where that is. So this is sort of a way for them to have time to get together and rehearse, because they'll then scatter to the three winds in this case, and then reconvene somewhere probably without much rehearsal time.
Now, I have to admit, when I think chamber music, when I get a mental picture, I hear those words chamber music, I get a mental picture, I don't picture a trombone.
No, you don't.
But there's going to be
I don't either.
But a trombone will be included.
Yes. We, of course, most people who are listening to this will know very well the trombone player on our faculty, Jerry Sloan, in part because he plays in so many different styles and venues and such. And so he has not played before on this summer festival. And so we talked to him, and he said, well, there's this piece by an early Baroque composer named Bieber, Heinrich Bieber, who I know for having written lots of stuff for violin. He has a set of 12 sonatas called like mystical sonatas or something, in which case that's the wrong word, but it's close. And the tuning of the violin is different for each one of the 12 pieces. Very strange guy, but he wrote this sonata. He just called it Sonata Number 3, which was sort of typical, you know, non-descriptive title, for two violins and trombone and continuo. And continuo in this case means double bass and harpsichord.
Wow.
So it's a real chamber piece, but I can't wait to hear it. I have never heard the piece, so I will get myself out into the audience for this one.
That sounds fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to end with the American String Quartet from Dvorak.
Right. Right. And I thought that's what you were going to say when you said when you think of chamber music, what you think of is string quartet.
Right.
Which is the archetypal
exactly
chamber combination, two violins, viola, and cello. And this first piece is it's very well known by people who care about string quartets. Mm-hmm. And the tunes, some of the tunes will be familiar to people who up until that moment had no idea what a string quartet even was. It's Dvorak, I'm not sure, honestly, whether he wrote it when he was in the United States, but he certainly tried to give it an American flavor. And I believe he's the one who picked the title American in quotation marks. We will have, by the way, again this summer, musicologist on our staff, Martine Nedbal, is writing us program notes again.
Great.
So what people read in their program notes can correct any misspoken right. stuff from me today.
So it is Thursday night, the 24th. It begins at 7:30. It's at Celeboil, and it is free with reception afterward.
Right, on all accounts.
And you'll come back for the next 5 weeks after this?
I hope so.
Okay.
It's always fun to chat, and thank you.
It's a deal.
Okay.
Stephen Gates is a cellist, and he's also an organizer for the 4th annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. The first of the 6 concerts is Thursday night. It begins at 7:30 inside Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus. It and the 5 concerts that will follow on consecutive Thursdays, free. This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political stories of the last week. Fueled by growth in its domestic and overseas operations, Walmart stores posted first quarter profits of $3.74 billion on sales of a little over $112 billion. Sales were up 8.6% from a year ago, with strong performances from U.S. stores, Sam's Clubs, and the Bentonville-based retail giant's international division. U.S. same-store sales rose 2.6% for the quarter, higher than a 2% forecast. Net sales for the quarter also included a negative currency exchange rate impact of approximately $800 million, or those figures may have been higher. Axiom Corporation finished its fourth quarter with a $46 million profit, a big reversal from 1 year ago, when one-time charges bled the Little Rock-based data marketer to a $67 million loss. For its fiscal fourth quarter, Axiom reported flat revenues of $287 million, virtually unchanged from its fourth quarter 1 year ago. Conagra Foods gave notice that it intends to consolidate operations from a Batesville factory to one in Missouri in July, a move that will result in layoffs of 233 workers. Conagra's Batesville plant makes frozen dinners, and those functions will be added to a facility in Marshall, Missouri. A Joint Revenue and Tax Committee held its second meeting to review Arkansas's tax code, this time focusing on corporate and individual income taxes. The committee is reviewing the entire state tax code to assess Arkansas's competitiveness with surrounding states and to determine if meaningful tax reform can be shaped for the 2013 legislative session. During a Wednesday meeting, Department of Finance and Administration officials told lawmakers that individual income taxes generated about $2.8 billion annually, and corporate taxes yielded about $423 million a year. Combined, those taxes constitute about 55% of the state's general revenues. Last month, lawmakers looked at more than 121 sales tax exemptions. Revenue and Tax Committee members meet next month to review economic incentives used by the state to recruit business prospects. A coalition of elected officials, law enforcement, and religious leaders calling themselves Stop Casinos Now have joined forces to oppose 2 ballot initiatives seeking to legalize more casinos in Arkansas. 2 out-of-state interests, one led by Nancy Todd and another by Michael Wasserman, are attempting to collect signatures to change the Arkansas Constitution to allow for casinos in certain counties across the state. Partial funding for the opposition coalition has come from one of only two casino-style venues in Arkansas, Delaware North, the parent company of Southland Park in West Memphis. Oaklawn Park in Hot Springs offers electronic casino-style games, but it is not part of the coalition. In politics, Congressman Mike Ross dropped a bombshell this week, announcing he would not seek the 2014 Democratic governor's nomination. Ross said since he's announced he won't run for re-election to Congress, he's discovered there is life after politics. Ross will join Little Rock-based Southwest Power Pool next January as Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
NEBCO Fire EMS will host its annual Memorial Day Country Breakfast fundraiser on Monday, May 28th. Breakfast will be served from 7 to 10 a.m. at the NEBCO Community Center in Garfield. All proceeds go to NEBCO Emergency Medical Services ALS Ambulance Service. For information, contact them at 479-359-3134 or search NEBCO on the events page at KUAF.com.
So that's a week from today, Memorial Day.
It is.
The Bentonville Police Department will be hosting a 12-hour women's self-defense class beginning Monday, June 11th at 6 p.m. The class will continue on the 12th and the 14th at the Bentonville Police Department. No cost to attend the class. The session is open to the public. However, space is limited. If you'd like more information or would like to register, you can call 271-5986.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 21st of May, 2012. It's the birthday of Alexander Pope, London, 1688. Catholic family, and there was a wave of anti-Catholic sentiment in England at the time, so he was not allowed to attend public school. His aunt taught him to read, a priest taught him Latin and Greek, and he fell in love with the works of Homer when he was only 8. He developed tuberculosis, which affected his bones and stunted his growth. He was a hunchback, about 4'6" tall. Not many of his poems are read today, but he's very often quoted. It was Alexander Pope who said, "To err is human, to forgive divine, and fools rush in where angels fear to tread." Pope said, "A little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Pierian spring." And it was Alexander Pope who said, "Be not the first by whom the new are tried, nor yet the last to lay the old aside." And it's the birthday of the poet Robert Creeley, born Arlington, Massachusetts, 1926. He was 2 years old, riding in the car with his father, when a piece of coal hit the car, shattered the windshield, a piece of glass went in the boy's eye, which then had to be removed. His mother moved the family to a farm in rural Massachusetts. Creeley said, "Growing up with 5 women in the house, it was like growing up in a forest attended by wolves. Went to Harvard, then dropped out. He wanted to be a writer, but he spent a few years drinking too much, getting in fights. After the birth of his son, he moved the family to a chicken farm in New Hampshire." And Creeley said, "I learned more about poetry as an actual activity from raising chickens than I did from any professor." Robert Creeley published more than 60 books before his death in 2005. The poet Charles Olson was a great influence on him. Creeley said, "Olson taught me how to write, not how to write poems that he wrote, but how to write poems that I write, a very curious and specific difference." Here's a poem for today, some lines from Alexander Pope's An Essay on Man. "All are but parts of one stupendous whole, whose body nature is, and God the soul, that changed through all, and yet in all the same, great in the earth as in the ethereal frame, warms in the sun, refreshes in the breeze, glows in the stars and blossoms in the trees, lives through all life, extends through all extent, spreads undivided, operates unspent, breathes in our soul, informs our mortal part, as full as perfect in a hair as heart, as full as perfect in vile man that mourns, as the rapt seraphim that sings and burns. To him no high, no low, no great, no small. He fills, he bounds, connects, and equals all. All nature is but art, unknown to thee, all chance, direction, which thou canst not see, all discord, harmony, not understood, all partial evil, universal good. Wrote Alexander Pope in An Essay on Man. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, offering online review, monitoring, and management services for businesses that know the importance of online reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by Nook, Simple Touch with Glow Light by Barnes & Noble. Designed for bedtime reading, Glow Light offers paper-like reading with the lights on or off. Available at neighborhood Barnes & Noble stores or Nook.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Eureka Springs Blues Weekend is Thursday, May 31st through Sunday, June 3rd. Over 35 blues artists will perform through the city at a variety of venues. Performers include Tommy Castro, Ruthie Foster, Kenny Neal, the Cate Brothers, and more. Tickets and information and more information is available on the web at eurekaspringsblues.com.
Speaking of music, a variety of summer arts courses will be offered at Northwest Arkansas Community College. As with other course offerings, these special courses are open to all area adults who register through the college admissions office. Classes include Introduction to Photography, Film Arts, and Voice, Piano, and Organ. For more information, you can send an email to scooper@nwacc.edu.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Midland.
Midland, Arkansas?
Yep.
And that is, I think it's near Fort Smith, if I'm...
Mm-hmm. It's south. It's about midway between Hackett and Hartford.
Well, there you go. That's why it has its name.
We will have to look this up. But probably. One can hope.
That's right.
And it makes sense.
Let's see. This weekend, you participated in the
so
New Play
busy.
Festival.
I did.
And you were in that competition where a group of people get together and you get the first line of a play, the last line of a play. You have 24 hours to come up with a 10-minute play.
Also a prop.
And a prop. Yes. What was your prop?
A cane.
Okay. So how did it go?
I think it went really well. It's really just a lot of fun. Christy Hall, Jason Sewell, I know you've heard them and on here. We've talked to them. And they were on a team also with Liam Selby and his dad and one other person whose name escapes me right now. And that's the team that won. They did a really good job.
Oh, those are of the four people you mentioned. They're all very, very quick-witted and very creative. So I'm not surprised
and
that was the winning team.
The gentleman that participated, again, I apologize for not remembering his name. He was also... very, very good. So, but it was a lot of fun. I think everybody had a lot of fun. I'd never done it before. I wouldn't want to do it again tomorrow because I'm really tired. But
how does
it work? Well, we checked in at 5:30 and then we brainstormed over dinner and then we took a break and then myself and our playwright sat down and started writing and stopped around 2 in the morning, got up started all over again at 9 the next morning and went until we hit the stage, 6:30, 7:30.
You're running on nervous energy by the end, right?
Oh, yes. I'm running on nervous energy today.
Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
Oh, it's an upgrade.
The two of us will be back tomorrow for another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. You can always check out shows you may have missed online at ozarksatlarge.com. Thanks, Antoinette.
Thanks, Kyle.